Come back to order. Thank you for continuing to hang around. We're going to start with House Bill 3036. Barbara, if you could give us a summary, please.
HB 3036.
Public hearing, too.
Provides that rates, terms, conditions, charges, and fees for telecommunication services provided by a telecommunications utility electing to be regulated under the Act are not subject to regulation by the Public Utility Commission.
Ginny Lang, Jim Green, Brant Wolf, please. And, we let Representative Edwards know we started this one, but we may want to comment as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Lang, and I'm Director of Governmental Relations for Quest. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 3036, which creates comparable regulatory treatment for Oregon's four large telephone companies, Quest, CenturyTel, Embark, and Verizon, in order for them to compete in the marketplace for voice telecommunication services in the same manner as their most direct competitors, cable, wireless, and voice over internet protocol providers. At the same time, it ensures that service quality and other customer and competitor interests continue to be under the purview of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Nearly every company in the market today is focused on providing the highest value bundle of services to customers, including dial tone, which would be local and long distance service, high-speed internet access, video, wireless, paging, voice over internet protocol, and more. The telecom world has changed dramatically since I went to work for Pacific Northwest Bell 30 years ago. There were over 10,000 company employees just in Oregon. Today, we have about 1,100. There are likely many more than 10,000 Oregonians working in the industry today, but they are spread among dozens of different companies providing services using fiber optics, satellite, copper wire, resale, and internet protocols. And none of them are regulated by the Oregon Public Utility Commission. All you have to do is open a newspaper, turn on the TV or radio, or look at your mail or the many billboards touting the latest not-to-be-missed telecom offer to know that the competition is fierce. But while all of that is going on, just as was contemplated by the Telecommunications Act of 1996, passed almost 14 years ago, the regulatory structure in Oregon has not been modified to keep up with the rapidly changing industry and marketplace. We still have in place three full-time appointed commissioners, more than 15 staff persons dedicated to telecommunications, and an elaborately complex regulatory regime designed to regulate four, soon to be three, telephone companies. And the last telephone company rate case was in 1997. Let me give you just a quick thumbnail sketch of the industry segments. Incumbent local exchange carriers, or ILECs, include Quest, Verizon, CenturyTel, and Embark, and about 30 smaller Oregon telephone companies, of which about half are commercial carriers and the others are co-ops. Verizon, CenturyTel, and Embark are under traditional rate of return regulation. Quest has not been under rate of return regulation since 1999, when we opted into legislation passed by the legislature despite vigorous opposition from the PUC. There has been neither harm nor adverse effects for either customers or competitors from that. And today, Quest operates under a price plan pursuant to ORS 759255, in which we negotiated pricing flexibility for more competitive offerings, while the PC keeps in place price caps on primary line residential and business exchange service. The 30 companies under 50,000 access lines or dial tone lines are not required to undergo rate cases or receive approvals for changes in prices or product offerings. ORS 759040 provides ways for customers of these companies who are not satisfied with their service to seek redress from the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Such action has not occurred in the past 20 years, if ever. Co-ops are not regulated by the PUC, but rather answer directly to their customers who are also members.
Ms. Lang, I notice I'm following along in your written testimony. I'm just thinking about the number of people who also want to testify.
Along.
That would be fabulous.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Other elements of the industry include competitive local exchange carriers who are certified by the PUC but not regulated in any other way. Cable companies and wireless providers are not regulated by the Public Utility Commission. A quick overview of what House Bill 3036 does. It guarantees pricing for basic telephone service for customers for 3 years. It protects a customer's ability to have the PUC ensure compliance with service quality, customer complaints, and billing resolution, and guarantees that customers who choose basic telephone service are not forced to buy a package of services that they do not want. There are a number of other things listed in my written testimony that House Bill 3036 provides. It is time for this change. In order to provide the same pricing flexibility for the four large telecommunications companies that all other market participants have, to help stabilize the business and maintain a knowledgeable and experienced union workforce, to recognize that these companies are no longer monopolies. They have been losing significant market share to wireless and cable, to CLEX and other new network structures like Internet Protocol for the past decade, and to maintain the Public Utility Commission's oversight of service quality standards, wholesale relationships between companies, and provide assistance to customers. Thank you for your consideration of this measure.
Thank you, Ms. Lang. Who's next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing Verizon. I do support what Ms. Lang has testified to and her written comments. My testimony will be brief. I am here to describe an amendment that's down in Legislative Council, working with the chair's office, trying to get the amendment out. It doesn't appear that it came out. Real quickly, the amendment to House Bill 3036 would, on page 2, we found an error on line 5. The word intra-lata should be intra-state. And then a corresponding amendment to delete the definition of intra-lata on page 1, lines 9 and 10. That's one piece of the amendment, so that it is, in fact, an intra-state, not intra-lata. The additional amendment, if you look at Ms. Lang's testimony, it talks about that this bill is similar to a bill that passed in Idaho in 2005. One of the provisions that was in that piece of legislation where the Idaho legislature passed this bill allowed their PUC at the end of the third year of transition, 180 days prior to the end, the PUC on its own motion could say, no, in the interest of the public, we ought to make this project go a little longer, an additional 2 years. And we've added that amendment to this bill in the amendment that will be coming out of Legislative Council so that the transition period could be, in fact, 5 years if the PUC believes at the end of the third year in the public interest, we need to take a look at that for a little bit longer. The final amendment is one that's been discussed ever since a work group got together on this bill back in June, I believe it was last year, we started looking at this, dealing with the issue of telecommunications consumer who, for lack of a better term, her name's been floated around the building as Aunt Millie. What do we do with Aunt Millie who wants just basic phone service, doesn't want call waiting, doesn't want call forwarding, doesn't want any of the bells and whistles that many of the telecommunication customers have? She wants this, and she may be on a fixed income. She may not qualify for the programs that are in the state that help keep telecommunications rates lower. The amendment would say for Aunt Millie and the Aunt Millies in the world who have basic primary residential service, what we call 1RF service, 1FR service, just basic phone line, their rates would be frozen for the term of the transition, whether that be 3 years or 5 years, at the rates that were in place at the time this bill would be enacted. At a time after the transition period, the telecommunications companies may be able to raise their rate $1 per year for each year after that. That's what the amendments do. Verizon is in full support of House Bill 3036. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I thought it was Aunt Bessie, but thank you very much. Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA represents those 30 companies that Ginny Lang mentioned in her testimony. We support 3036 and the corresponding amendments, strongly support them, urge your positive consideration of them. I don't want to restate anything that's been said. But I do. I'll be redundant just a little bit. As Ginny pointed out, most of my members are not price-regulated or rate-regulated by the Public Utility Commission of Oregon. There's some merger activity right now, and when that merger activity is consummated, I'll have one member left that's price-regulated by the Public Utility Commission. Without passage of this bill, that's the way it will remain. And we think that's unfortunate, and we strongly advocate for passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for the panel? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. I know you're all familiar with House Bill 2405, and if that bill were to pass, would this particular piece of legislation be necessary?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, maybe I'll take a shot at that because that's a bill that Verizon has been working on, Representative Holby, as you're well aware. If that bill were to pass, that bill deals primarily just with voice over internet protocol, telephony issues, and internet-enabled protocol services. This bill would still be necessary because that bill is focused on those few issues. This bill is focused on the broader issue of telecommunications for those rate of return regulated companies plus Quest that are still under PUC regulation.
Follow up.
And maybe that is another question to follow up with that, but if in fact House Bill 2405 did pass and Quest and some of these other companies used an internet-enabled protocol service, I believe under that bill they would automatically not be regulated. So this... Essentially. So, I mean, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, yes, if they all switched over to a voice over internet protocol system, but we still have the opportunity and we still have the requirement for a carrier of last resort obligation. So even if 2405 were to pass and this bill were to pass and we had customers out there who didn't want that type of service, we would still have to offer them the basic telephone service that they're accustomed to today.
Thank you. I'd like to hear if the others agree with that.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Holby, I haven't thought through House Bill 2405 because I haven't been working it as closely as Mr. Green has. So I would have to defer to his view of that. What I do know is that that House Bill 3036 covers a great many more and different kinds of services than just voice over internet protocols. So I would certainly think that it would need to be passed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, I would just point out again that absent those two companies who are price regulated, the 28 other companies that we represent are not. They're not price regulated right now, regardless of what media they choose.
Are there other questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Three more people who have signed up to testify. Lee Beyer, the chair, Art Butler, and Elise Brown. That's fine. Mr. Chair, you're welcome to join them or wait until they're finished. Your choice.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Elise Brown this afternoon for AT&T, and I meant to join my colleagues who just previously testified and here proudly to support House Bill 3036. As my colleague stated, consumers today have many choices when it comes to communications, from wireline to wireless. And 3036 brings parity to how those telecommunication services are treated and therefore encourages healthy competition and choices for consumers. I wanted to make sure everybody was aware that this bill was the result of a work group over the last nearly a year, as Jim said, and led by the leadership of Representative David Edwards. We appreciate being involved in the discussions, and we now therefore support the final product, House Bill 3036. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Art Butler. I'm an attorney with the Aderwin Law Firm. I'm here representing Tracer Northwest, which is a consortium of public entities and private businesses that represent the interests of large telecommunications users in the state of Oregon. We oppose House Bill 3036 for four primary reasons. First, I think it's important to recognize that competitive conditions vary dramatically across the state of Oregon, and competition simply is not sufficient to constrain the pricing of the incumbent carriers. Much of the competition that you hear talk of is really competition directed at the residential consumer market, not business market or larger businesses. While we buy a lot of wireless services, they are adjuncts to enable employees to communicate while they're mobile. They do not substitute for or replace wireline service. Cable companies, to the extent they even serve business areas, provide services only to the smallest businesses who can be served with products that are designed for residential customers. They do not target larger businesses, nor are they considered an adequate substitute by larger businesses. VoIP is a fledgling service used primarily for internal communications or as a substitute for long distance. There are considerable uncertainties surrounding VoIP technology, both from patent litigation and from a number of regulatory proceedings at the FCC and the states, which could substantially increase the cost of that service to VoIP providers and to end-user customers. It's important to recognize that VoIP requires a broadband connection, and that broadband connection for businesses is almost invariably provided by incumbent telephone companies. In fact, the VoIP services themselves are most likely provided by incumbent telephone companies, so that really represents a revenue opportunity, not a competitive alternative. The most significant source of competition for larger businesses is wireline CLECs, competitive local exchange companies. They are much more highly dependent upon facilities of incumbents in this state than are their counterparts elsewhere in the country, which means that they are very vulnerable to changes in the prices and availability of facilities and their substitutes from the incumbents on the wholesale level. And prices are therefore highly vulnerable to changes in the wholesale market. Our second reason for opposing this is that we believe it is unnecessary. Existing law provides ample flexibility for incumbent telephone companies to get flexibility necessary to respond to competition. Quest, which is really the only incumbent that's utilized those, I think demonstrates the point with a price plan that was referred to that was approved last year, which gave the company considerable flexibility in the pricing of services and freedom from a number of regulatory requirements. From our standpoint, that proceeding leads us to the third element, which is that price plan proceeding was based upon a settlement of interests from small consumers, large consumers, CLECs. It contained important protections against price increases for the two most critical services purchased by large users. It also contained critical provisions which allowed the commission to monitor Quest performance under the plan, including its pricing behavior, and allowed it to intervene if things should go haywire and it would be necessary to protect against an abuse of market power. Finally, we think this bill would allow the incumbents to engage in predatory pricing, which could further harm what wireline competition there exists. I have written testimony which elaborates on these points. I'd be glad to respond to any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Are there any questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Butler, just quickly, can you tell me a little bit about Tracer Northwest's relationship to the work group that was referenced?
We tried to meet with Representative Edwards to discuss our concerns, but were unsuccessful in doing that. We were not included in that work group, and as far as I know, the interests of large consumers were not represented.
Thank you. Other questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Chairman. We're ready to hear from you. While you're getting settled, let me just note for the record that we have received written testimony from Integra Telecom, their general counsel, so that should also
be with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Lee Beyer. I'm the chair of the Oregon Public Utility Commission, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss House Bill 3036, a bill that seeks to completely deregulate the telecommunications services provided by incumbent local exchange carriers. And as noted by the previous people, that's aimed at four basic companies in Oregon, those being Quest, Verizon, CenturyTel, and Embark. What House Bill 3036 removes existing statutory protections by deregulating telecommunications services, rates, terms, conditions, and market entry conditions relating to the provision of telephone services. The Commission is not sure why this bill is necessary. Current statutes allow for ILECs to obtain PUC approval to deregulate services under certain conditions. To date, the Commission has granted ILECs some form of deregulation 14 times. Last fall, Quest came to the Commission requesting pricing flexibility for bundled services in order to compete with other phone companies. The Commission granted Quest requests for economic deregulation with one exception. That exception was for basic single-line dial tone. That's essentially the comment that Mr. Green made of the Aunt Millie line. Quest is free to bundle and price all other services any way they choose, and I'll show you how they did it in a minute. The Commission order did allow for re-regulation in case some unforeseen problems arose in the marketplace or, frankly, in the case the companies chose not to fulfill their contractual obligations to consumer. Some of you have heard me refer to this before as the silver hammer of regulation. It's the threat of doing wrong and coming back under control. This pretty much gave the company exactly what they had requested and what they said was needed for them to compete in the market, while also ensuring that rural residents or those with limited means could obtain basic phone service. In providing this relief, the Commission also indicated to the other three companies that we would grant them the same flexibility without a rate review if they desired. To date, no other company has chosen to make a request. In view of that, you can see why we're somewhat surprised of why we're here today talking about this bill, since they have the opportunity to do the same thing with much less problem than coming to the legislature. However, HB 3036 eliminates regulation of basic phone service of any electing ILEC, regardless of alternatives or the level of competition present in the market. For an incumbent telephone company, the bill would exempt essentially all aspects of commission oversight of the company's existing PUC oversight of the company's existing customers over a 3-year period, or I guess if the amendment, a 5-year period. The bill provides for 10% annual basic telephone rate increases for 3 years, a cumulative of 30% over 3 years. At that time, the company is totally deregulated and free to raise rates at will. The incumbent local exchange companies have commission allocated service territories and must serve responsibilities. These companies provide about 96% of residential wireline service in Oregon. The biggest four incumbents together provide 87% of this coverage. There continues to be consolidation in the telecommunications market, as Brant mentioned. Embark and CenturyTel have announced that they intend to merge by mid-year. The Commission believes it is important to ensure that the interests of individuals and local businesses are protected while the telecommunications industry consolidates. We needed to protect the interests of these consumers because most still rely on ILECs and wireline for local telecommunications services. Unfortunately, the local telecommunications market is not fully competitive. Business customers have somewhat greater choice than individuals, but competition appears to be limited to the Portland area. Until we have viable competition providing customers real choices, we should continue to ensure that ILECs provide basic phone service at a reasonable cost. You are likely to hear, and I think you did hear, about the level of competition faced by incumbent providers from sources such as wireless and cable providers. While it is true that more and more customers are electing to cut the cord, there are still over 1 million Oregonians who choose to be served by a regulated local exchange carrier. Many of these citizens simply cannot afford to buy or do not have access to alternative services. This bill removes the safeguard provided by regulatory oversight of basic services. In conclusion, I respectfully suggest that the timing of this bill is wrong for several reasons. Our economy is suffering, and many Oregonians simply cannot afford to pay more for basic telecommunication services at this time. Further, and perhaps most important, it is an increasingly complex telecommunications marketplace. We must ensure that customers have access to basic service and a means to address and resolve a range of issues surrounding service delivery, maintenance and repairs, billing, and other matters related to their services. This bill completely eliminates the PUC's ability to resolve or address these matters. In fact, about all that's left after the end of 3 years is protection for the companies. Accordingly, we respectfully urge the committee to reject this bill. Mr. Chair, I would like to, I'd like to comment. There was some mention of a work group, and there was a work group. The PUC was not involved in that work group. To my knowledge, the only participants in that work group were companies that provide telecommunication service. I may be wrong on that, but that's my understanding. I would like to share with you a report from the Citizens Utility Board's corollary in California, which is the nearest state that's completely deregulated, and I'd just like to give you a quote from that report, and you can look at it for yourself. The report starts by saying, California consumers have experienced an ongoing stream of rate increases following California's decision to lift price caps. While the most recent increases for basic services likely will cost consumers over $100 million a year, pricing freedom for telephone companies has turned into a travesty for consumers. I would note that there is an additional report, I don't have it with me, that the National Association or the National Regulatory Research Institute has done on a national basis, which demonstrated that in states where deregulation has been implemented, prices has increased significantly. And finally, Mr. Chair, I would like to give the committee a copy of an actual bill that was received this month by an Oregon customer of Quest. I will note that Quest is the company that the commission chose to price deregulate, and I want to be very clear on what we did on that so that you know. What we said is we believe that we're moving into a competitive marketplace, and from the commission's perspective, we recognize their need to compete on a bundling basis. The protection on an economic sense that we thought was important for customers was making sure that every Oregonian had the right to a basic line, and we negotiated that and agreed that that would be capped for, I believe it was at least 5 years, and then they could come back and discuss that. But all other services, however the company wanted to bundle those packages and sell them or price them, was totally at the company's own decision-making, which I think is appropriate. But this bill will show you what the effect of that was, which essentially means that every one of those other services has been increased in cost. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the Chair? Representative Holman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the testimony. What, Mr. Bayer, one of my concerns is of course, you've referenced in your testimony is the basic line service. I'm asking you for some conjecture maybe from your position. If this bill were to pass, would there be anything to compel service to many parts of rural Oregon? Would it be possible that many people in Oregon may not be able to find telephone service?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think under the bill, at least to the 3 or the 5 year limit, as I understand the bill, they would still have allocated territories and would have to provide carrier of last resort services. It's not clear to me at what price. It could be that they could charge $1 for those services or $100 for those services. It really would be up to the company to decide that. After the 3 years or 5 years, as Mr. Green explained in the amendment, it appears to me that other than for technical things like interconnections and pole attachments and those sort of things, you would be completely deregulating the industry. So I'm not sure at that point what would be left. In most places in the state, to be very honest, in most places in the state, certainly in most of the Willamette Valley, there are alternatives. Residential customers could get a cellular service. harder for small businesses. If you're talking about small, you know, if you have multiple lines, pretty hard to do that with a cell phone. They do have access to certain competitive providers. We refer to them as CLECs. CLECs depend on having access to the ILEX lines, or what we call the loop, and that's how to get back to the station. And it really depends on whether that service is available or not. You asked the question about what happens if you have an internet, you know, enabled system. Under that, under existing federal law, if, for example, a company like CenturyTel, and I'm not suggesting you would, I'll just use that one because it's less inflamed at this point, if they were to change their system, they would not have to provide that access under federal law to CLEC. So essentially, the CLEC would either have to find a direct connection or couldn't offer the service. So not a clear answer. Certainly not clear when you get out in a rural area where you may not have a telephone, you may not have cellular access, you may not have a cable company running by, so you're pretty much limited to the ILEC that serves you.
There was one other person who had indicated their interest in testifying. He was gone briefly, but I see Mr. Bissonnette back. We're trying to wrap up quickly. He's got a couple more bills, but I want to give you a chance. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had a chance to make your comments briefly.
Thank you, Member. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers of utilities, including telecommunications. I am here today to speak against House Bill 3036. I didn't hear all of Chairman Byers' comments, but I'm sure our thoughts are pretty well aligned. I'll just make a couple of additional points. It's often said that increased competition lowers prices. Probably not if we look at the experience in other states where this same policy has gone into effect. What we're particularly concerned about is basic service, just the dial tone service, making sure that people have access to that, that don't want a lot of bells and whistles, that don't want wireless, that just want that connection to the outside world through the dial tone. In California, where this very same plan was implemented regulatorily, we've seen basic service cost increase between 13% and 26%. In the interim, Quest came to the PUC with a docket for deregulation. Cub was a party to that docket, and we actually reached a settlement in that docket with Quest to maintain regulation for basic service and a little bit of additional consumer protection. And although that settlement was in direct response to a docket filed by Quest, it was also offered by the PUC to other telecom issues. Frankly, we kind of thought that settled the issue, but then this bill was introduced this session, and so we would, if the committee is interested in moving forward on this issue, we would actually look at proposing that you codify the settlement reached in Quest, because we thought that struck the balance between consumer protection and some of the quote freedoms and flexibility that companies were looking for. So thank you very much. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bissonnette. Any quick questions? Representative Holby.
I'm sorry to belabor this a little bit, Mr. Chair, but I'm curious. You mentioned consumer protections, and so if this bill were to pass, and I know there's another bill that talks about voice or internet-enabled protocol services, what recourse would consumers have if they had a disagreement with the quality of service they have, or a billing dispute, or, you know, under these bills? Where do they have recourse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, currently for a rate-regulated service, they could avail themselves of the PUC customer service. Without rate regulation, depending on what the bill said, if it was total deregulation, they'd have to go to the Attorney General's office. Now, the Attorney General doesn't do a customer-by-customer assistance. They kind of look at trends and where the most complaints are, and then once they kind of identify a trend, then can file suit on behalf of, or, you know, on that issue, either on behalf of a class or on behalf of a particular customer that they've identified. So that is one of our concerns with this bill, is, you know, how are consumer protections strengthened? And again, our observation in the same approach in other states, consumer protections have not been strengthened.
Just a quick follow-up, and just to make clear, so specifically there is no specific individual remedy if this bill were law for a consumer with problems?
It would, again, it would depend on the final bill, but under total deregulation, that would be very unlikely.
Thank you.
Time to move on, I think, just based on the clock and the remaining things in front of us. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you for questions. And close the public hearing on House Bill 3036. With that, open a public hearing on House Bill 2579 and simultaneously a public hearing on House Bill 2734. Bob, if you could remind us about those two bills, and then I'll have a quick comment about what we're maybe while you're getting set.
There we go.
Okay, go ahead.
HB 2579. Amends ORS 509216 to allow the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to permit the commercial fishing of salmon in the Columbia River by fixed fishing gear or seines. Modifies ODFW's food fish management policy to include the responsibility of ensuring the natural runs and genetic diversity of Andromedas fish, fish migrating up rivers from the sea to breed in fresh water. And HB 2734 prohibits gillnet fishing on the lower Columbia River except in off-channel fishery enhancement areas specified by rule of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Becomes operative January 1, 2010. Declares an emergency, is effective upon passage.
Thank you. It feels like we're kind of the liberal arts committee today, moving from paint to solar energy to telecommunications to fish. What I'm hoping we're going to do with this brief hearing is to comment. You'll recall that we had a long hearing on these concepts and general ideas earlier, several weeks ago, a couple months ago. What I'm hoping today is to have a brief update from some of the interest groups who have been involved in the conversation since then on how things may have evolved and what's new on this. There are some other conversations that are happening about which I'll have something to say when we finish up. So with that, I will call up Trey Karskinen and Dave Moskowitz, please.
I'll speak to that one, too.
And I guess at the same time, Dave Shamp, if you'd like to join, please. And recognizing the time, if you gentlemen could be brief, I'd really appreciate it.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Trey Karskab, and I'm a resident of Tualatin, and here to testify in support of House Bill 2734. I represent the Safer Salmon Coalition, which is a broad group of sport fishing and conservation interests who have come together to resolve one of the most contentious and difficult issues in state government. Over the past few months, you've immersed yourselves into this issue and clearly understand the difficulties, and I want to thank you for your consideration, interest, and keeping an open mind on this. No one can deny the issue of Columbia River salmon allocation and harvest is rife with conflict and acrimony. No one can deny that this issue demands resolution. I don't think anybody can deny that the sport fishing industry is in crisis and needs help. No one can deny that the Astoria fish processors and commercial interests depend on Columbia to deliver their salmon bounty, that they need to flourish. The stakes are simply too high to leave this issue where it's at today. Safer Salmon, from its outset, has sought to be an honest and real solution to this problem. We came to you as the compromise solution. We didn't present ourselves as anything but a win-win solution, and we stand committed to that goal. Today, we'll present an amendment to you that provides further compromise on our part. We hope you appreciate our approach and willingness to address and present real solutions that provide broad economic and social benefits. We also pray you entertain short-term solutions that can end the crisis the sport fishing industry is in today by directing a policy change that will broaden spring chinook seasons as we wait for the implementation of longer-term solutions that will once and for all put this issue to bed. Doing so will also send a clear message to all involved that change is coming and it's time to talk and work through our differences. As we presented, this is not an experiment. In the late 80s, when the Bonneville Power Administration and federal government worked collaboratively to create the select areas in the lower Columbia as a long-term conservation measure that would ultimately move the commercial interests out of the mainstem Columbia and into off-channel areas. This is an effort to reduce bycatch and on sensitive stocks of salmon steelhead, and it's in this document here. It's dated in the early 90s. There's a history of success in safe areas to point to, and enough confidence in these fisheries that the professional salmon managers from both Oregon and Washington have elicited similar proposals to transfer stocks into these areas in an effort to limit gill netting. You've heard from the experts on all sides of the issue, so I won't rehash what's already been said, but I'd like to clarify a few points, raise a couple new thoughts. To be clear, we believe the Safer Salmon Plan will land at least as many fish in the commercial community that the commercial community is getting today as they're already getting. In some fisheries, safe areas already account for upwards of 70% of the commercial harvest. Regarding the question of how the tribes will be kept whole with this policy change, we trust the state's fish and wildlife agencies, along with the tribes, will continue to work cooperatively to manage these fisheries so the integrity of USV Oregon is maintained. Safer Salmon in no way compromises these agreements and will provide enormous benefits to the tribes with additional sockeye and fall salmon harvest opportunities. We have a vision that someday we can look to a solid 8 months of sport salmon fishing in the Columbia, seasons that will benefit communities from Astoria to Hermiston, and all points in between. This is achievable through the right policy.
Mr. Carstein, I'm just looking at the clock. Could you quickly summarize the amendment and the other compromises and contributions you've been able to make?
Yeah, the amendment that you're looking at looks to defer this to a work group in 2010.
This is the Dash 1 amendment?
This is the Dash 1 amendment. That's correct.
Good.
And we have a couple others in LC right now, but we weren't pleased with how they came out. But this is as close as we've come to something that we think will at least give you a little longer look at it with the opportunity of putting this in place in 2011.
Okay. Thank you very much. I apologize for having to cut everybody off. We're really short on time. Mr. Shamp?
Yeah. Chair Reed, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Dave Shamp. I'm a resident of Cornelius, and I'm the chair of CCA Oregon. I represent about 4,000 members in the state of Oregon. CCA is a grassroots organization. I'm here today as a volunteer. I'm actually taking vacation time today to be here. And
I question your judgment on that, but other than that, we appreciate
it. It's a bright, sunny day,
and here
I am inside. But thank you very much for the opportunity today to participate in this hearing regarding House Bill 2579. I have submitted written testimony, but rather than take the time to read through all that in respect of your time and others that are yet to testify, I'd like to just hit some highlights. As I mentioned, I am here today to testify in support of House Bill 2579. CCA Oregon views this as a critical first step to change the way that salmon are harvested in the Columbia River. As you're aware, the current law requires the use of non-selective gill nets, and House Bill 2579 would provide for the use of selective gear such as seines, pound nets, weirs, and fish wheels. One important thing to keep in mind about House Bill 2579 is that it's consistent with the implementation of the recommendations of the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, HSRG. Recall when we were here on the 26th of March, Steve Smith gave a very good presentation about the work of the HSRG and their recommendations and findings. It just so happens that the following day, on March 27th, the HSRG actually rolled out their findings and recommendations to the general public. I had the opportunity to be there that day, and I must say that it was really quite impressive. Senator Patty Murray made the opening remarks, expressed her support and appreciation for the work of the HSRG, and recommended implementation of their findings and recommendations. Closing remarks were by Congressman Norm Dix, who spoke out fervently in support of HSRG, their findings and recommendations. And one of the key recommendations of the HSRG is to implement selective commercial fishing gear on the lower Columbia River. You know, and one of the things that we've heard in the past is this selective gear just won't work. As Steve Smith testified before you, presented to you on March 26th, there's clear evidence today that it will work. The work that's being done by the Colville Indians in the Upper River demonstrates that they can selectively harvest these fish with an extremely low mortality rate. The numbers that they were providing were somewhere between 0 and 5% mortality. That's the way it should be done.
Let me ask if there's, just again on the time, if there's anything new you had to add in terms of amendments or new approaches or that sort of thing. Just want to get a quick pass by and then we got to keep going.
Sure. Two quick comments. First of all, House Bill 2579 is not intended to increase the commercial fleet. That's a concern that's been raised by the commercial side of the equation. The intent of House Bill 2579, again, is not to increase the size of the commercial fleet and would apply to current license holders. The bill should be amended to reflect our intent, the intent being not to increase the fleet, and not to create a fleet that would compete with the current license holders. A recommendation was made by the Coastal Caucus. They were requesting a task force to look at this issue. CCA supports that request, provided that the appointment of a task force is to oversee the implementation of Selective Gear and HSRG's recommendations, and it is clearly understood that their mandate is to ensure timely and effective realization of a fully selective fishery. Okay. CCA Oregon does not support appointment of a task force to study the need for Selective Gear, discuss allocation issues, and those types of matters.
Thank you very much. Ms. Boskowitz, this might be your biggest challenge in your legislative career. How quickly can you testify on a complex issue?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz. So I'm here today on behalf of the Native Fish Society. We appreciate being able to speak on this issue in the public. We were not included in the informational hearing, and so we definitely appreciate the opportunity to speak to the entire committee. I've handed out two pieces of paper. One is a summary of the essential elements of wild fish management, and by Bill Bach, who's the director of the Native Fish Society. The second are some comments on the House bill, and then some suggestions, amendments. I'm not going to state those into the record right now, but
we can read them.
Right. I do want to just say quickly that Native Fish Society supports House Bill 2579 because it provides some options for the future. The idea of going back to a selective gear could be helpful. Regarding the Safe for Salmon bill, you know, we believe it's stated that this is a conservation tool, but there's not enough detail in the bill to give us an assurance that this will provide the conservation benefits to the wild fish that enter the Columbia that it states. We believe that the Fish and Wildlife Commission has adequate statutory authority from the legislature to protect fish that are entering the Columbia. We think that the conservation charge to the commission is to prevent the serious depletion of native populations, and that's its first charge, and that's balanced somewhat by providing sport and commercial access to those fish. That's the second statutory charge, but the first one is conservation. This bill, if it's to be a conservation tool, needs to protect the native fish that are coming back. We suggest a number of amendments. It's on the back side of the one pager. And if you can, if the proponents of this bill can add some of these things in, we believe that this could be an effective way to make sure that there's more fish reaching the spawning grounds through the Columbia River. And that is the goal of everyone here, whether it's a tribal fishers, commercial fishers, sport fishers of any stripe. We all want more fish coming back to spawning grounds. They're the most productive fish. They're the ones that are going to produce more offspring than the hatcheries. And this bill, if it's going to be a conservation bill, needs to add some of these in. We know that time is of the essence here, so appreciate the brief opportunity to make our points.
Thank you. I think you did a good job of doing it very quickly. And a good way to end, too, on the common interest. There are two more people who have signed up to testify, so I appreciate your gentlemen being here, Jim Markey and Bruce Buckmaster. I'm hoping you might have worked out that maybe only one of you needs to speak, just as we're pushing hard here on time.
Okay, I'll be this is Jim Markey on behalf of Sam and Brawl. Bruce and I will be very brief.
Thank you.
We are opposed to House Bill 2734, the so-called Safe for Salmon Act. While the proponents keep talking about a win-win program and a win-win plan and a win-win bill, this bill does nothing except relegate commercial fishing to the safe areas off the main stem, effective January 1, 2010. Next year, and provides no additional fish, as the proponents keep saying they have. We're opposed to that bill. We're opposed to House Bill 2579 because the bill, too, is flawed. As the gentleman from CCA testified to, regardless of their intent, the bill would allow additional commercial fishing with seine gear and others, and we're opposed to that. Briefly, we would support in our conversations with Chair Reed and others talk of a task force. We support the idea of a task force. We have participated in every task force and work group that has ever been created on this issue. We've not walked away from any of those groups. Some of the proponents of this legislation have in the past walked away and been unwilling to continue talking to try to find middle ground. We desperately want to find middle ground on this on these issues.
Not in the middle of the river, I assume. Is that a good spot to conclude? Mr. Buckmaster, do you have any very, very quick comments?
Chair Reed, thank you. No.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I apologize for cutting you off. I did want to make a couple of quick comments about that about the general issue, since we have spent so much time on this issue, and I appreciate the fact that people have participated in a pretty civil discussion on something that's so important and so complex. It is, I think, contentious and complex, and we all start with the idea that we want to make sure more fish are here. I think it's clear that the department is doing its best to manage for that goal of conservation, and that the multiple dimensions that enter on this discussion make it really difficult to find an easy path or an easy understanding of it. The federal issues, the Endangered Species Act, 13 different stocks that are listed in the ESA, and I'm hopeful that we can get past the kind of zero-sum nature of this discussion, that if one side loses, the other side is winning, and the reverse. Perhaps the most interesting piece that I learned before long ago was a report here from the Board of Fish Commissioners, and I've been doing a little test with some of my colleagues and people who are involved in this. I'll read you just a paragraph. It's about two sentences. And the trivia question then is when this was written. It says, "It is with regret that we mention the fact that there is such a feeling of enmity or jealousy existing between parties using the different kinds of gear for catching salmon in the waters of our state, as this condition of affairs is a great drawback to proper legislation for the protection and preservation of the salmon in our rivers." I've showed this to a number of people who I've asked them to guess when this was written. Guesses have ranged, and when I flip the page to reveal 1888, many people are surprised. So I think it would be presumptuous of me to think that what has been going on for 121 years is likely to be solved in the next short time. However, I don't think it's possible to overstate the importance, the significance economically and culturally of sport angling, of commercial fishing in the state, in this region. And I am working hard to craft an amendment that will comprise a work group that will that will give some significant charge, some significant comment about what we'd like to see in that come out of that process. And I'm hopeful that all the folks who have been involved in this discussion to date will continue to be involved in that. I am optimistic that good things can come from that, and that the legislature will continue to be an active participant in that process. So with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2579 and 2734. We may be out of time here. Representative Gilliam, would you like to make a quick comment? I feel very badly that we've run out of time on a bill I know you care about, and we could do a very quick note on House Bill 2896 if you would like.
Why don't we hold over?
Okay. Can we hold it over for Thursday? We'll hold over House Bill 2896 for Thursday, as well as the work sessions on House Bill 2181 and House Bill 2531 and House Bill 3158. Are I given all the notice that we need to give?
I would note for the record, though, that Dave Moskowitz testified on behalf of a bill that has my name on.
Very good. Well, that's good.
Apparently, I'm signed by that.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.
Unfortunate for you.
Oh, my tattoo.